Where I think we have an opportunity here is to use vasopressin more.
And so what we may actually be seeing here is that pairing of hydrocortisone with vasopressin rather than the vasopressin effect alone.
Welcome, everyone, to Critical Care Perspectives in Emergency Medicine. This is Mike Winters from the University of Maryland School of Medicine in Baltimore, Maryland. Thanks so much for joining us on yet another CCPEM podcast. Excited to talk about this particular study and this topic dealing with vasopressors in septic shock based on, once again, a hot off the press article. But before jumping into that, some exciting updates, exciting news from my amazing co-host here on CCPEM. First, I'm going to turn to Dr. Greenwood. And while we could go to Philly, I'd rather find out about a recent international trip he took overseas. Dr. Greenwood, how was it?
Oh, it was absolutely wonderful. So I was extremely lucky to take a week and a half long trip to Japan early in the month. Now, I was able to travel with my entire family. My wife actually ran the Tokyo Marathon, and that was her sixth major marathon of the major. So in the culture of marathon running, it's a big achievement. And so I was really proud of her. But I also got to mix in some work too. I got to meet some EMS and emergency medicine colleagues down in Osaka, where I just happened to be walking by a fire station and some EMS personnel were standing outside, and I was able to communicate just well enough to talk about all the different nuances of United States emergency medicine and EMS fire rescue and some of the differences in Japan. So that was a really rewarding conversation, fun experience for me. But the people were absolutely wonderful to us. Highly recommend it for anyone who has the opportunity to make that trip. It was well worth it. We learned a ton, and it was great to learn about their culture. So shout out to all our listeners from Japan. Thank you for being so kind to us.
That's awesome. So glad to hear that you had an amazing trip, and congrats to the wife on a huge accomplishment with the majors in terms of the marathon. That's an impressive, impressive job. Well, let's return to the U.S. and head south to New Orleans. I want to check in, Dr. W. How are things with you?
Things are going great. We've survived Mardi Gras and getting ready for New Orleans Food Festival and then Jazz Festival as well. So we're gearing up for our fest times.
And those are amazing times down in New Orleans. I loved going to Jazz Fest and the Food Festival. So anyone who has an opportunity thinking about it, head on down there because it is amazing. And well, let me guess, the last 12 or 13 years, you've heard me now go out to San Francisco to check in with Dr. Rodriguez. But Dr. Rodriguez, this might be the last time we're checking in from San Francisco, I hear. Tell us more.
Yeah, Mike. So I'm starting a new position down in Southern California. I'm going to be the Associate Dean of Clinical Research for the University of California Riverside School of Medicine, and looking forward to that move. I've been at UCSF for 20 years, and this is an exciting new chapter.
Congrats again, Rob. That's an amazing accomplishment. We're looking forward to hearing you tune in and give us updates from a new location.
Yep, looking forward to it. It's going to be fun.
You will do amazing. All right, so let's turn to education for this podcast. And as I mentioned, we're going to get into septic shock. We're going to get into vasopressors and septic shock, specifically second line vasopressors, and that is vasopressin. I think all of us would fairly agree that probably our first go-to in terms of vasopressors in patients with sepsis is going to be norepinephrine. But what about adding a second pressor? And I think many would turn to vasopressin, but really there's not a whole lot of evidence to guide us on the optimal timing of vasopressin. And that brings me to the article we're going to discuss here for this particular podcast. This is just published within the last week and a half or so in the Journal of American Medical Association, and it is titled Optimal Vasopressin Initiation in Septic Shock, the OVISS Reinforcement Learning Study. So with that lead in, Dr. W, I'm turning to you. Set the stage, give us the background, and really, what was the objective of this particular study?
You got it, Mike. This is a great study and incredibly timely because there's a lot of chatter about this worldwide. Sepsis accounts for more than 270,000 deaths each year in the US alone. And we all know that our resuscitation of the patient with sepsis is really about early recognition, early institution of appropriate antibiotics, fluid resuscitation, source control, and the administration of vasopressors in those patients who continue to have persistent hypoperfusion and shock states. The current international guidelines for the resuscitation of sepsis really point, as you mentioned before, Mike, that norepinephrine is our first-line agent, period. No debate over that. They also recommend that we add vasopressin as a second-line agent when the mean arterial blood pressure remains low, despite what we call moderate or high dosages of norepinephrine. And we typically use a fixed dose of vasopressin in that. It's not something many of us use in a titratable fashion. Some do, but most folks use a fixed low dose once we've hit a mercurial marker of norepinephrine. So while vasopressin use has increased, so has the cost of this agent. And there's very little literature to guide what we think is the optimal timing, not just of administering it, but also of discontinuing it. Reinforcement learning is a typical branch of machine learning where a virtual agent learns from trial and error an optimized set of treatment rules to maximize the probability of a good outcome. So this is new research for us to delve into. The current study, OVIS, Optimal Vasopressin Initiation in Septic Shock, uses that reinforcement learning. So what's the objective? The objective is actually to derive, validate, and measure the treatment implications of a vasopressin initiation rule that's optimized to improve both short and long-term outcomes among critically ill adult patients with septic shock who receive norepinephrine.
Outstanding, Peter. Really well done in setting the stage. This is a new concept, something that we haven't really touched on in terms of this reinforcement learning or the machine learning, and really looking at it in this particular study for a rule to say what's the optimal time for vasopressin initiation. Well, as you might expect, it's a little complex in terms of the method. So we're turning to Dr. Greenwood here to take us through the methods of the OVIS study. John?
Yeah, absolutely. So, just for I think all of us who are used to kind of traditional clinical and observational research, if we zoom out and say, hey, what kind of study is this? This is a really, really large observational study. And so, all the caveats that come along with an observational study apply here, and it doesn't by any means imply any form of causality. These are looking at associations and relationships here. So, the first thing that's important when we look at this paper is to understand a couple of the cohorts that were examined here by the machine learning method. So, the first is a derivation and a validation cohort. So, they did training and testing of their machine learning model along with internal validation, using the data of over 120,000 critically ill admissions from 2012 to 2023. And the patients they were looking at were those who had a first episode of community or hospital onset septic shock. And these patients came from either the emergency department, ICU, and they were receiving norepinephrine as part of the inclusion. After they created this model, they created an external validation model, used three data sets from the MIMIC IV, eICU CRD, and EHR data set from UPMC. And this data set had over 250,000 admissions from 227 hospitals between 2008 and 2020. And please, please look to the paper if you're looking for specific details. I don't want to get too bogged down in it, but I do want to just highlight a couple important things. The validation cohort consisted of the internal validation and external data sets, and each patient was essentially described by some really simple demographics, including age, sex, height, weight, race, ethnicity, early SOFA score. So, a reminder, that's the sequential organ failure assessment score often used in septic shock research. Mean arterial pressure, lactate, norepi dose, how much fluid they got, and a number of other things. Now, as far as the machine learning goes, they did some model training. And as Peter was mentioning, the reinforcement learning model is a type of machine learning where the software learns how to make decisions by interacting with the data and asking questions. And that's to put it simply. It aims to maximize the rewards over time by choosing actions. So it's creating almost like a simulation to make a decision-making process guided by the likelihood that a future outcome will occur. So it's basically creating this world of if-thens and trying to figure out which combination of factors will result in a certain outcome. And the reward was weighted by a combination of in-hospital mortality and changes in lactate, mean arterial pressure, SOFA score, norepinephrine dose, all the things that we do at the bedside, just in this virtual environment. The authors then described the percent of patients who would receive vasopressin, the timing of the initiation relative to shock onset, relative to the dose of norepinephrine, the SOFA score, lactate at that time, and then looked at the clinician-observed action under the optimal reinforcement learning rule that it created. So it used this weighted pooled logistic regression estimate to look at the final outcome in individual blocks based on the decisions that were made. And then they looked at specifically the primary and secondary outcomes, which were the primary outcome was in-hospital mortality. And then the secondary outcomes were use of mechanical ventilation and renal replacement therapy. So, as I said, hopefully that gives you a summary of how this really complex algorithm took place to create this virtual environment of clinical decision making to identify potential optimal outcomes. Please, please refer to the paper itself, or please feel free to send us questions too.
Agree, John. You really did a nice job going through just a complex methodology about this learning model. So really well done. And now we're going to turn to Dr. Rodriguez. Rob, what did the model tell us?
Yeah, so the results of the study were that they included a total of 14,453 patients with septic shock. In the derivation cohort, they had 3,608 patients. In the validation cohort, they had 10,845 patients. Within that validation cohort, 6,251 were from the UPMC data set. 3,056 were from the MMIC-4 data set. 910 were from the EICU CRD data set. And then 628 were from the UCSF data set. In terms of clinician-initiated vasopressin, in the three external data sets, vasopressin was initiated in 31% of these patients. The median SOFA score of these patients was 9, and it was initiated at a median of 5 hours after shock. The associated norepinephrine dose when they initiated the vasopressin was a norepinephrine dose of 0.37 micrograms per kilo per minute. And the median lactate in this cohort who received vasopressin was 3.6. So overall, kind of a relatively sick population, but note the median time of 5 hours after shock for the initiation of vasopressin. The in-hospital mortality ranged from 28 to 43%. In terms of the reinforcement learning rule, there were 2,362 patients in whom vasopressin was recommended by the rule and was initiated by the clinicians. In other words, in this group of 2,362 patients, the clinician followed the rule. 14% had vasopressin initiated in the same hour as when the reinforcement rule recommended it to be given. Compared to clinician observed action, the reinforcement learning model suggested vasopressin initiation in more patients, in patients with a lower median SOFA score of around 7 as compared to 9 in the group at large. They recommended vasopressin initiation within 4 hours as opposed to 5 hours, and with a lower norepinephrine dose of 0.2 micrograms per kilo per minute and lower serum lactates. And results were consistent across each of the three validation sets. With regard to the primary outcome, the reinforcement learning model outperformed the clinician-observed action. And here it really is the meat of the results. Concordance with the rule in each time block was associated with reduced odds of in-hospital mortality. So I'll repeat that again in terms of the primary outcome. When clinicians were concordant with the rule, when their decisions were concordant with the rule in each of the time blocks, this was associated with reduced odds of in-hospital death. In terms of secondary outcomes, concordance with the rule was also associated with the reduced odds of requiring renal replacement therapy at each point in time, but it was not associated with reduced need for mechanical ventilation.
Thanks so much, Rob, for taking us through those complex results, but really interesting, and I'm really interested in hearing your thoughts on this particular study, this rule that, as you mentioned, when clinician action was concordant with when the rule recommended initiation, there was an associated lower in hospital mortality. Let me just hit on a few limitations here that the authors identified in the paper, and then I'm going to circle back for your really in-depth analysis here. But John, you indicated it, overall observational in nature. Importantly, in the derivation of this reinforcement rule, along with the testing, it was using existing patient information in those databases, not necessarily prospectively tested. In terms of just the patients contained in those data sets, is it generalizable to all patient populations? I think it's reasonable to say that it was fairly generalizable across 227 different facilities in the overall set, but still that remains a potential limitation. Overall, those databases, the information and the data in those sets still cannot fully capture clinician subjectivity in terms of making the decision to initiate vasopressin. John, I think you alluded to this early on, but overall, the data sets and the information used didn't necessarily capture the infectious source or the timeliness of source control, which does impact overall outcomes in terms of sepsis and septic shock. And overall, the rule was designed to either initiate vasopressin or not initiate vasopressin. It didn't really get into any dosing strategies, and then also talk about stopping or decreasing that dose, Peter, as you mentioned really early in the background. So overall, a very, very interesting study. I'm going to turn, Peter, to you first, thinking about this paper, thinking about this rule whereby it would recommend perhaps we use it more frequently at lower SOFA scores, maybe earlier in the onset of septic shock and at a lower norepi dose compared to perhaps what they had observed in clinician action. What are your thoughts on that?
So thanks, Mike. My thoughts on it first are I'm so gleeful that I didn't have to talk about the methods at all. But where I think we have an opportunity here is to use vasopressin more, and not wait until we've ratcheted up the norepinephrine to an ungodly number before we reach fixed dose vasopressin and add that on. And so I think I'm going to be emphasizing earlier vasopressin for those patients who are marching up the norepinephrine. And then if the norepinephrine's at 15 micrograms per minute, I'm going to go ahead and initiate fixed low dose vasopressin. You know, there's some other things that this paper doesn't talk about that's a pet peeve of mine in my own unit, and it's at what point in time do we get the vasopressin off? Right? Because this is costly medicine, this is expensive care medicine, and once folks have stabilized and you're weaning down the norepinephrine and you're now, you know, below 15 mics per minute, that vasopressin should be weaned off as well.
Great way to start things off, Peter. Thanks so much. Let me turn to Rob.
I agree with the sentiment about starting vasopressin earlier. I think it's been underutilized, and pretty much all of the evidence shows that it's a valuable additive to our sepsis regimen, along with hydrocortisone. And that kind of segues into my one critique of this study, and one limitation of this study is that this is not a randomized control trial. We have to, emphasize that for our listeners. This was not by any means a randomized control trial. This was using modeling techniques with derivation set modeling and then validation set modeling. And so any observational study like this, you're not going to be able to control for confounding variables. And a big confounding variable to me is that, I've become of the practice of when starting vasopressin, I also start hydrocortisone. I do that at the same time. We all know that hydrocortisone in septic shock has been associated with improved outcomes. And so what we may actually be seeing here is that pairing of hydrocortisone with vasopressin rather than the vasopressin effect alone. So, again, I'm a fan of vasopressin. This is not a randomized control trial. I do think there are very, very likely some confounding factors. And the most obvious confounding factor to me would be the delivery of hydrocortisone at the same time as you're giving vasopressin.
Really great points, Rob and Peter. I'm going to ask John to bring us home here.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with Peter and Rob so far. I'm just going to say two quick things. I think it's really important when we look at these machine learning studies to remember that the data going in is going to influence the interpretation by the machine. So if it's bad data that's going in, or maybe not bad data, but if we're being honest, we don't know a lot about the clinical decisions that were being made at the time when vasopressin was initiated or norepinephrine was started or what was going on with the patient. So there's a lot of nuances to clinical care that, as Rob said, can't be captured by a study like this or by a machine learning algorithm. So you have to be really careful in interpreting the decisions made by the algorithm because they weren't at the bedside. And so any flawed decision making will make the algorithm kind of make flawed decision making as well, right? And then the last thing is the association of a better outcome with earlier vasopressin. You do want to be careful too that there's a potential that these patients may have been slightly less sick. So just another thing that isn't necessarily captured by an observational study that you'll get in a randomized control trial and being really thoughtful about whether or not you're using this to change your practice or if you're using it just to inform future research. I think that's really important. But it is a really interesting study nonetheless.
Agreed. And to that end, I am very appreciative and grateful for the three of you taking us through this complex study and one that is hot off the press and very much being talked about throughout a variety of resuscitation, emergency medicine, critical care spheres. And did a great job taking us through this and really look forward to everyone who's listening. Questions, feedback, would love to hear also your interpretation of the Avis study as we start to digest more of this. But couldn't be more appreciative of the three of you. Thanks so much. Another outstanding podcast that we are going to draw to a close. And Dr. Rodriguez, next time we rejoin, we're going to be asking you how things are from Southern California.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, everybody.
So safe travels. Once again, congrats on the new position. We'll look forward to talking to you and get an update on our next podcast, and look forward to talking to all of you on our next CCPM podcast. Bye for now.